The following podcast is intended for listeners over the age of 18. It contains mature subjects and adult discussion. Listener discretion is advised. As we are not doctors or psychologists, all advice is for novelty purposes only. All advice and discussion comes from our own personal experiences. Yours may well be different.
Welcome to The Swing Set. Climb on up. There's always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore open relationships and swinging. The pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of swinging in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hand down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Tonight we're rejoining the podcast that started last week about bisexuality. So if this is the first episode of Life on the Swing Set you've downloaded, you might be a little lost. So you probably should go back and download episode 21 of Life on the Swing Set as well. That way you can hear the beginning of this discussion. And because I don't like all those previously on things on DVDs and TV shows, I'm not going to be recapping. So probably should listen to the last week's and then, you know, you'll know what's going on this week. But there's more bisexuality discussion right now at Life on the Swing Set. I am Cooper Beckett.
Hi, everybody. It's Ginger.
Hey, I'm Dylan.
This is Shira B. Katz.
I'm Kidder Caper from Sex is Fun.
Another fascinating phenomenon on the other side of things is the bisexual female friends that I have. As soon as they get into a female-female relationship, suddenly they're lesbians. I'm not quite sure how that works, but it does show on the other side that the bisexuals disappear as soon as they're partnered. They disappear when they partner with women because they become lesbians. They identify as women. They disappear when they partner with men because they're acting straight, right? It does set a precedent, I think, that is anti-bisexual.
Do you think it's a refusal to identify? It's this desperation to be one or the other. It's a refusal to identify as bisexual because it's not a recognized definition, really?
I think so. I think it's a less respected one because it does innately say non-monogamy, and I'm not sure who made the point before, but non-monogamy is the least respected of the subcultures.
And all the acronym of GLBT, we don't have an initial in there, if you notice. It's not there. And the really strange...
And they don't like us.
No. Well, the strange thing about it is that no matter what you are in GBLT plus S for straight, we are the majority. If you were to count the amount of people who actually had lifelong monogamy, you're looking at less than 2%. If you were to count the people that had serial monogamy, even if you were to include serial monogamy, we're looking at 75% of all marriages include at least one infidelity. Now, that's cheating. So swingers aren't even counted in that in that equation. Non-monogamy is, without a doubt, the majority. Most of us are not monogamous, and we don't even get a fucking letter in the sexuality, score.
And it's desperation to maintain. It's people's refusal to admit that they want non-monogamy that is causing. It's all the cheating. It's because they won't talk about wanting fucking non-monogamy.
But I think there's a reason that there's not a letter there, though, because you can still be we were talking about the definitions of gay, bi, straight, where you kind of there's wiggle room there, but if you're going to define yourself, you have to be one of them. You can be a bi swinger, a gay swinger, a straight swinger, and put those three prefixes before open and poly. I don't think swinger, open, and poly replace those three. I think they augment them or modify them. And so maybe the reason that you know, LGBTQS, you know, whatever you end up making.
It's like
the whole...
skill points. You're gaining. I have a +5 non-monogamy.
Hey, they're considering adding A to the GLBT. You know,
which would
A
be androgynous?
For.
Asexual. Be,
no. Asexual. A is for amoeba. The people who just don't like sex, but they want to be viewed as a valid sexuality. And yet, non-monogamy, we can't get a letter in there? Seriously? There's not enough room for us?
Even but again, I still stick with my point where at the you know, SOP modifies...
Our swinger open poly.
Yeah, swinger open poly. Modifies the existing terms of LGBT. As opposed
and
to
I'm all
replacing
for it.
Them.
We need a president. We need somebody to join and
well,
like, you know, fight
you know
for
the,
us. A
you
little
know
lobbyist.
The reason Obama is president is because of swingers, right?
No.
Go on.
He got the swing vote.
Did you kill his joke?
Wow. I'm sorry.
I'm let down on so many levels now.
BRB, drinking more.
We're from Chicago, and we had a guy who was running... who is married to Jerry Ryan, who's Jack Ryan, and he used to take his wife to swing clubs. And because of that, he didn't get his seat. And because of that, there were special elections. And because of that, Obama wound up there. And because of that, he became a strong, prominent Illinois, Chicago senator. Because of that, he's president.
I thought it was because his wife was on that really shitty Star Trek show.
Well, no.
That,
see, that would have been
a lot
okay.
To it.
If you
we
remember,
love that.
The whole thing got broken open because they actually divorced, right? So yes. if he, number one, had listened to his wife and stopped trying to force her to go there, or, you know, if his wife had been open to it and actually wanted to become a swinger, then
yeah,
that would have been
Chicago,
fine.
I think she was
because
open
nothing would have
it,
come
honestly.
The Chicago swing community really could use Jerry Ryan as a face of Chicago swingers.
Not just a face.
A body of Chicago swingers.
Yes.
Everything.
Nice,
we love everything
Dylan.
About Jerry Ryan, and we would love to have her in Chicago as a swinger.
I really do believe that going back to the swinger open poly SOP movement, I think that it doesn't necessarily replace the GLBT movement.
It,
but I
it
do
sits
think
on
it,
top of it.
I think that it's a completely separate issue entirely. I mean, it is related, but I can see in the next 15, 20 years it being its own issue entirely. And
oh, we got to jump on that bandwagon.
I think we are the bandwagon, Kidder.
We might be the bandwagon.
We're already
our
on
bandwagon's it. A lot smaller than their bandwagon. We want to get on theirs because they have a lot of people fighting for their
I
rights.
I see.
So when does this become a movement? That's what I want to know. I want to know when.
Well,
when
I mean,
this stops
the,
being...
the question is, when does it become something that's acknowledged as an actual thing? You know, when I look at it and I look at my sexual desires and I realize that I'm not exclusively attracted to women, and I realize that yes, there are men I am attracted to, and yes, I do enjoy sucking the occasional cock. I can no longer identify as straight because I'm not.
Can you
the
make
thing
a little
is,
soundbite of that for me?
I'd be happy to tell you that whenever you'd like, Shira.
Oh, thank you. Continue.
The thing you also have to look at, though, is the gay men who enjoy eating the occasional pussy are also not gay. They are somewhere in the middle. And here's the real problem is people have this overwhelming urge to slide themselves as far out to the edge as possible. It's like that spinny ride at the carnival. You're stuck all the way on the edge, but really we're all somewhere a little bit away from the walls and somewhere
I agree.
Really just trying to figure out what it is we actually want.
You know, I've always identified as a 2 on the Kinsey scale. That's where I've sat, and a lot of, I would say, some people have wanted to slide me closer to the zeros. And what's funny is whenever some guy tries to get on me, I totally slide back towards straight on my own. Because I want to believe that we're all more bisexual than we are, and then every time I get a chance to prove it to myself, I find out I'm really quite straight. And it's just me. And it could be the boobs are that awesome. I don't know
well,
what it is, but I want to be closer to the middle. I just find myself not close. Like, I don't find myself driven in that direction. But I do believe that, you know, 0 and 6 is actually repulsed by the idea of sliding closer to the middle or to the other end. And really, unless you're repulsed by it, you are at least a 1 or a 5.
And so you're saying that you definitely have a higher comfort level with one particular gender than the other. Do you think that's the case for most bisexual people?
No, I don't. I think that I want to be more bisexual than I am. You know, I do. And I'll just go ahead and explain that as my own human frailty. That there are very few straight male sex educators that aren't complete douchebags. I'll go ahead and challenge you to find me a few. You know, Dr. Drew is a complete douchebag. You know, no matter who it is. Exactly. And so I wish I was more on the bi side, but the reality is I much prefer women. But at the same time, I want to keep that open mind so badly that I want to keep my 2 so badly, but every time a guy tries to kiss me, I slide so far back into 0 or try to claw my way back to a 1 that it's kind of funny.
Well, I find that interesting because, you know, I've had this conversation with a few people, namely the lovely Shira here, about how I have no interest in whatsoever in kissing another man. I really don't. There is nothing in me that makes me want to kiss another man. But I am someone who has sucked another man's cock, and I've had mine sucked, and that is fun, and that is playful, and that is interesting, and I find it very interesting, and I don't know why this is, but I am able to completely disconnect the romantic interest, which to me would include the kissing portion.
Oh, I totally get that too.
Because, from the physical.
Aren't you curious about trying it?
I am a little.
The cock doesn't intimidate me. The cock doesn't scream, you know, I want to make love to this man. The cock just screams, this feels great. This, you know, why not? But as I start tiptoeing up the body and I start seeing the abs and the chest and I start being reminded more of masculinity, then once I get up to that chin line, it's all over. It's like, nope, I'm just not there.
It's interesting that tiptoeing up the body is what reminds you of masculinity when the most masculine thing you've got is hanging out right there between the legs.
I disagree. Yes, I will say that a penis is just a really big clit. That is not that big of a deal. You know, really, the parts aren't the big deal. It's the essence. And you know where that comes? That's where that's strongest. It's when you look someone in the eyes.
That's where the essence
of someone's personality, you know, of someone's gender is.
And you know what? As a swinger, I'm always critical of those who will not kiss, but will do everything else. You know, there are swingers.
I like kissing way too much.
Well, and that's very true. But I find it. I think right there highlights the sort of dichotomy that I have going between what I'm good with women and what I'm good with men. Because for me, once you get into the kissing with the men, then it becomes something different. And I don't know why that is. And it could just be that I'm new to this, but I find it fascinating.
You know, Cooper, I think that it is a very common conversation that I've had with friends who, you know, pick and choose their label, whatever it is, and it's more closer to that, you know, Kinsey 6 or that Kinsey 0, and they're saying I'm gay or I'm lesbian, and the sexual behavior, there's more flexibility there as opposed to that intimacy or emotional partnering where they're pretty clear on that. They're pretty clear that they could only partner with a woman or they could only partner with a man, but sexual behavior and fun, sexy sessions with someone is okay. And that's the sex positive piece. I feel like there's a sex negative piece to people saying bisexuality is okay in the sense that you, if you could emotionally partner with both, then you're okay because you can pick one or the other and you can then land firmly in that monogamous world. So you're okay. But those of us who are, and I say those of us, I mean, I'm actually one of those people who could emotionally partner with a woman or with a man. I do feel that in emotional intimacy with both, I say both genders, and there I go with the binary. I mean, I think it's really, like Shira said, has to do with the person. But I think it's just as viable to be the bisexual who just likes to play. There is nothing wrong. Sex should be fun. Sex, there it is. Sex is fun.
So true.
Ding, 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 ding.
Exactly. It should be fun. It should be playful. And there's nothing inherently wrong with just wanting to have sex, just wanting to play with a cock or just wanting to play with a pussy. That is just as hot and sexy. And that is that sex positive place you can go to say, you know what? This is what I like. And it doesn't mean I have to fall deeply in love with this person to enjoy their body and to let them give me pleasure and me give them pleasure. That is just as viable bisexuality.
I crawl towards a zero. Though, it's like, my wife isn't like, I need you to suck this cock and I need you to kiss this guy. Lorax is like, oh, it totally turns me on if this guy would kiss you. But my wife isn't saying that. So therefore, like, I'm not feeling my whole desire file coming on because of guys.
And for me, my wife is so into watching that she's able to have orgasms just from watching it. So, I mean, it is something that is very much a thing she wants to see. And so for me, I mean, I think part of the dichotomy, and this goes and speaks to the difference between being a bisexual male as being a bisexual female. Bisexual females have been overly and ridiculously sexualized for the last, I'd say, 10 to 15 years. It has become the epitome of what is sexy to a man, the two girls thing. And it's become such mainstream thing and such a thing that it's not even unusual anymore. You know, when Ellen came out on her show, it was weird to see two girls kiss. In the decade since then, it has become so mainstream to see two girls kiss that aren't even lesbians, because it is part of the, oh, well, you know, it's okay for two girls to kiss because female sexuality is fluid, or don't worry, she'll find a man someday. It's become this thing.
I always felt like that was me saying to a woman, let your sexuality do what it's going to do. Like, I want to set you free because I'm not like the men of the 50s who are like, I'm going to control your shit. I always felt like allowing female bisexuality was my way of saying, you can do this and I'm going to be cool with it.
You know, I was talking to Cooper earlier about this today. I am waiting for the time when this happens with men, where we have men kissing and making out at bars to try to impress the ladies that surround them. I can't wait.
Have to take your lead and admit that they like it, because until my wife saw it, she never indicated it whatsoever that she liked it, and she in fact gave me the, hey, whatever you want to do is okay with me. So I had to go that alone. I had to make that journey to, yes, I want to try this alone. Whereas she, of course, on the other hand, got the, absolutely, I want to see you with a girl. Let's do that today.
Women are evil like that.
I think that there's something to be said, though, for the female bisexual acceptance and fluidity. I agree with you, Cooper. The fluidity is definitely more accepted. But the pop culture piece of it is not about an empowered woman seeking what is going to give her pleasure. That is a performance-based, I'm going to kiss her because I've had too much to drink, so I have an excuse, and it titillates him who wants to get in my pants. So,
Well, that may be. And I'm 100% behind you on that's what pop culture is saying. But at the same time, that very bias and stereotype allows for the women who actually do want to make out with the other girls to do it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To be fair, nothing I do with anybody turns my wife on. I'm sorry to God. It's like, see, I'm the freak in the room. If I'm making out with another woman, it really doesn't turn her on. What it turns her on is the stuff she does, and then I get to do stuff that, you know, keeps me entertained while she does that. So it doesn't matter if it's with a guy or a girl. She's not really going to be all that turned on unless she's getting her needs met while it's happening. It's like a distraction for her. See, we're not good swingers. I shouldn't be on the show.
We are officially the 100% non-monogamy open show now. See,
oh yeah, how did that happen?
Well, Shira kept giving me shit until I went ahead and went with it.
Yes, where is my token straight friend when I need him? Inclusive.
No, we're not going to get any just normal straight no comment people. No, don't.
And if you think about it, the show is full of entirely what I've been referring to Cooper as the more progressive swinger. I mean,
yeah,
you guys
totally
are all
not,
talking about
the swinger community would not claim us at
no,
this point.
No, exactly.
Really.
You guys are always
especially
talking
now
about,
that I'm bi.
You guys are all talking about your close relationships with your friends that you guys fuck. From what I think the mainstream view of swingers is a much less emotionally attached, go to a club, you know, swap here, don't really ask names or questions and kind of fuck type of view is what people have of swingers.
So
I've never fucked anyone. I've never even fucked when I'm swinging.
I don't agree with
you,
though.
I bet you fucked someone's mouth.
We need to examine who our audience is, though. I mean,
our audience is whoever continues to listen to our show week after week.
Yes,
so
of course.
So we are examining our audience by changing what we talk about every week.
And I also think we have to let people, I mean, we go to the labels again. I mean, if people are listening, then they're willing to open their minds and learn. And whether they call themselves swingers or poly or just non-monogamous in general, or whether they don't identify with it at all and just are titillated by it, well, by all means, listen. And I just think that is their right. No matter how they swing or how they're poly, that's their choice and more power to them.
I agree. I think labeling is a very personal thing, and it has a lot to do with how people want to present themselves to the world and how they want to set a precedent. It will never completely define you, your label. There will always be nuance behind it, but I do think it's important to allow people to label themselves as they'd like to.
I just don't want to be a douchebag.
I don't think you're
a
douchebag.
Not
a straight male sex educator.
No, nobody can label you douchebag. You are the only one who can label yourself a douchebag.
I don't know, because Dr. Drew's a douchebag, and I'm going to throw that label on him.
Well,
Dr.
Drew is clearly a douchebag. Totally
see, look
different.
At us do it.
You know the funny thing about, I'll have to look into this Dr. Drew douchebag thing, because back, I'd say about 10 years ago...
He all fell apart in the last 5 years, at least.
Well, okay, like, back before I was sexually open, okay, I thought he was the coolest thing in the world, because he was talking about all these things that nobody talked about, and it was awesome, and it was like the end of the 90s, and, you know, it was edgy, and so I had a lot of respect for him, but I haven't listened to him or watched him since, like, the end of the 90s. So.
He said anal sex is dangerous for everyone.
Right. Really?
Like,
yep.
Blanket statement, you know. And trust me, if anal play was bad for you, I'd know by now.
Yeah.
I mean, I test sex toys for a living. Come on.
You have to consider Dr. Drew's background when you're talking about him as a sex educator, though. He's an addiction medicine specialist. Right. And so he's coming from a completely different era, or I guess industry, which happens to overlap with sex sometimes, but he has a completely warped view of things. When all you have is a hammer, everything is nails.
Yeah, if you're going to talk about sex and be a sex educator and put sexuality information out there, you need to be sex positive. If you have any sex negative baggage, you need to lose that before you start putting out your sex negative baggage to the world as the sexuality gospel. I mean, be sex positive.
You know, Ginger, though, that's difficult to do because people are asking you for what their norms should be as a sex educator. So when people, you know, write you and they say, you know, is cutting good or bad? They want an answer. And if you have any medical background, you know that tearing wounds open outside of a sterile field with cautery instrumentation, it's a bad fucking idea. And yet you're shitting on someone's fetish by saying, I can't endorse breath play. I can't endorse a lot of things. And so you're going to be a douchebag in someone's mind. It's really difficult to stay neutral as someone whose job it is to tell people, like, here's what's healthy behavior and here's what's behavior that'll probably get you killed.
But that mm-hmm. is not what makes Dr. Drew a douchebag. What makes Dr. Drew a douchebag is that when he was on...
I'm so glad that this became the theme of the last portion.
No, I'm just saying, okay, that's not what makes sex educators douchebags. It's when they throw a blanket over every issue. Dr. Drew in particular would receive calls and be like, oh, I hear in your voice you've been molested. This is the reason why you have every problem you have. You have a history of sexual molestation. Or he would just automatically pin people into these corners without taking any consideration.
Even though he was
nuance.
Often right, he still did things that made him a douchebag.
Absolutely.
I mean, oftentimes I was listening to the show going, he's totally right on. She has totally been molested.
But I mean, what really is frustrating with that type of blanket statement is what brought it to light was Adam Carolla was on Dan Savage's show.
Boo.
And I made a big stink about it. And since then, I don't believe it was me. But since then, the show now opens with you're listening to a stranger podcast now with 100% less Adam Carolla.
God, I love that.
But because of the, you know, Adam Carolla, I don't believe he had these opinions before Dr. Drew, because when he was pressed to come up with information about whether a woman should expect her man to be in a threesome with two men if she was expected to be in a threesome with two women. When pressed, he got into the only reason a woman wants to go into a threesome is if she's looking to end the relationship anyway. And, oh, of course, and then he danced around the man thing, and it was just like, I couldn't believe that a positive sex educator like Dan Savage would not just bitch slap the hell out of this man, because that is such a destructive statement. My wife wanted to fuck other people, period. And because I talked to her and we moved into a place where we could fuck other people, our relationship is much happier now.
Well, when we talk about sex educators, and let's just take ourselves away from the straight males for a second, because we know they're all douchebags, probably including me. And we look at the really good ones. When we look at Susie Bright, and we look at Rachel Kramer-Bussel, and we look at...
Tristan Taramino, my darling.
Ready? So when we look at these people, like, you know what they are? They're incredibly accepting of whatever people want to do that gets them off in a responsible fashion.
Very true.
And that's what we as sex educators try to be for our audience, our readers, or however we choose to broadcast ourselves. And for bisexuals, I always want to be someone who can be there saying, you know what, I believe that you want both of these things, and I'm okay without making you force yourself to go into a box of gay or straight. And I think that the best ones are capable of doing that. And when we do that, we know we're offending the largest audience, the one that says, I'm not cool with non-monogamy.
Yeah.
And look around at the really, the ones that are brave enough to just say what they know is true. I already know that every girlfriend I've ever had, if I've just said, you are sexually free, you can be with me and be sexually free, they all turn bisexual. It's not because I made them bisexual, it's because everyone is, if given the freedom to go there, and are rewarded for just being who they are. They will explore. They will do. They will try things, and you know what? Frankly, they'll fucking enjoy it too. If you're just there and are willing to hold them after they have that experience, freedom is a good thing. And frankly, we'd all be better off if we all had a little more sexual freedom to safely, responsibly explore a little bit and know that our partners are going to be there for us afterwards. And if you give that to your partners and if they give that back to you, damn it, we're all a fucking 3 on the Kinsey scale, at least some of the time.
When, you know, what to go along with that, what really pained me, you know, we talked about how we hide in our last episode. And what really pained me in my monogamous relationship were two things. One, that I wanted to fuck other people. That was a very important one, and that was very rough. But on the other hand, there was also this little vague idea that I might want to be with another guy. And both of these things were so horribly oppressive to me because I tried so hard to turn both of them off. And so when I was able to be in a relationship that was open, and what's interesting to me is that relationship was with the same person. I just, you know, got to that place where she said, yes, you can be open. And no, I'm not upset that you have interest in being with another guy. I'm not offended or weirded out. It's a little strange for me. Yes. But you want to do that? Let's do that. Let's make that happen for you, because I was very supportive with her desire to be with another girl. And we often put these horrible boundaries on ourselves. And it can be either of these things. You know, it can be trying to be monogamous. It can be trying to be straight. And when we try to be what we're supposed to be, it makes it so pressuring and frustrating and upsetting that then it's so hard to see another alternative.
Agreed. Well said, both of you.
Ginger, I have a question for you. As someone else who I am pretty sure identifies as a 3 on that Kinsey scale, would you say that's correct?
That's correct, yep.
I also identify as a 3. Do you find that you still have a gender preference? I'm not sure that I would say that I personally have a gender preference. I do think that I have a gender comfort level. I love women, but I turn into a 14-year-old boy around them. I get really nervous. I have yet to have a real long-term relationship with a woman. I've dated lots. I've fucked many. But I have yet to really get to a comfort level with women. Do you find that that's the case with you, or do you feel equally comfortable with both genders?
That's a great question. I would say I'm pretty much equally comfortable at this point. I mean, it's been a long road for me in terms of really going to that place of identifying as a 3 on the Kinsey scale and really being in the long-term relationship I'm in with Prof and having a long-standing, I mean, you know, we've sexually evolved together and it's been beautiful and fun.
Have you had a relationship with a woman?
Not outside of the context of my relationship with Prof. But we have had in our past a over 2-year-long relationship with a woman that she was a part of our relationship together. And so it's really hard for me to say, Shira, because we've not gone to that place where I've independently been seeking a relationship with a woman that has a deep emotional connection that hasn't included Prof as part of that.
Right. And I'm only curious about that because I do kind of miss having women in my life. And I find that men are drawn to me very, very easily. It's very easy for me to get a man's attention. But for some reason, when it comes to interacting with women, I have a really hard time initiating and I have a hard time sticking with it. And I feel like women are very passive and it's hard for one person to find an aggressive position when it comes to seeking a relationship.
Sure, and that I totally agree, and I think I've grown into that because I am now that woman.
maybe that's what I got to do. I mean, I find that when I do interact with women, it's usually on a purely sexual basis, and I wish that I was able to maintain a better relationship status with other women, but I find that that's when I am like, okay, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to get this girl, and I'm going to fuck her, and then I don't follow up. It's kind of over after that.
Sure. Well, you know, and it also, I think, has to do with being able to really be decisive, to know what you want, to be in that place where you're really turned on. And so therefore you just take the next step. And that is the difference too, between the emotional peace and pursuing a longer term relationship as opposed to just being opportunistic in some sort of swinger or, you know, sexually charged atmosphere where just going for a fuck is what you're looking for. And interestingly enough, I feel like I've grown in all of those kind of, I don't know, directions, and that I feel more confident that, I think part of it was just being confident in that it was okay to be turned on and okay. It really was just overcoming that internalized, you know, biphobia, I guess, of, you know, I really shouldn't be attracted to her because she's a woman. And once I kind of banished all of that, then I found a lot of confidence in just putting myself out there to whomever. I think some of that has to do too with being comfortable with being rejected. And that's a place that I've grown as well. So you do have to put yourself out there. And a lot of times it's the guys doing that. If you're in heterosexual, as a woman in a heterosexual scenario, is that we kind of just sit back and wait for him to make that move. And I find that I even fall into that pattern now in kind of our sexual realm, that I'll sit back and wait for him to do it. But when it comes to the women, I'm ready to step up and make it happen. It's interesting.
Ginger, how often are you really rejected by anyone?
I too find that very difficult to believe.
Oh, well, that's sweet. Thank you. It happens. It happens, but that's all good. It's all good.
How many people here who do not fall on 0 or 6 on the Kinsey scale were adamantly
0 being exclusively heterosexual, 6 being exclusively homosexual.
That is correct. How many people here were at some point adamantly anti-homosexual or bisexual before discovering their bisexual tendencies?
I was. I would have considered myself a 0 on the scale. Maybe about as recently as 7 years ago. Definitely 10 years ago, but maybe as recently as 7.
Maybe even a -1 in there, right, Dylan?
it's quite possible. I might have prayed myself to a -1 at some point.
I found that when I was much, much younger, I used to say things like, oh, I couldn't imagine ever even dealing with a vagina. And I find it interesting, and something that needs to be noted, is that I feel that closeted bisexual or gay people are pretty adamantly anti that stuff before coming out, and they're just completely terrified by it. So it's interesting to note that how things can change over time.
I don't remember a time where I was ever like really anti, and it's probably because I've spent much of my adult sexual life with this vague inkling of interest. So I've tried, you know, I just generally don't deal with it. That was my solution, was just don't deal with it.
I knew I was going to try everything in college. I knew that since I was born.
Since you were born.
Since I don't remember ever being anti-sex anything, actually, ever.
I think that's very healthy of you guys.
Yeah. I think I'm in there. I mean I certainly had my own personal baggage, but I was always open to whatever anybody else was doing, which is kind of ironic. But once I kind of learned that where I stood, then it just all made sense that I wasn't judging others because I guess I knew maybe in some way that that was a part of me all the way along. But it was really Prof who kind of moved me through that evolution to get me out of my head and out of judging myself when I wasn't judging anyone else. So.
Right on. You know, Kidder's here, and I'm very tempted to be like, well, bisexuality is fun because...
sex is fun?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Wee.
Give me the semblance of having my own show.
Oh, I'm just teasing.
It's your show, Cooper, man. It's all yours.
Well, thank you for joining us, Kidder. And yes, thank you for Kidder. Everybody else. Who is here on the show. Thank you, Dylan and Ginger and Shira. And we had a great show here tonight. Thank you, as always, for listening to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. This has been episode 22, which is the second part of our awesome, enormous bisexuality discussion. Next time, we have Kendra Holiday, who is the beautiful and vivacious TBK behind thebeautifulkind.com, who was on our show for two episodes. She came out on National Coming Out Day, and she's going to be joining us for a two-part discussion on coming out, as well as how coming out has affected her life in the community. Till then, we would really love it if you could like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/theswingset. You can also follow us on Twitter, which generally devolves into Ginger and I flirting or, you know, talking about orgies. So it's worth reading. That's twitter.com/swingsetlife. You can also email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. Email us comments, ask questions. We'd love it if you gave us a call and left a voicemail on our voicemail line. Don't worry, none of us are going to pick up and put you on the spot and ask you questions. It's just direct to voicemail. The number's 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. Though I would imagine if you would like us to pick up and have some sexy time fun with you, you could probably email us and let us know that, or leave us a voicemail. And there's also, you know, we'd love to hear from you on voicemail. Tell us we're wrong. Talk about anything. Or, you know, have a nice banging orgasm on the voicemail. We've always enjoyed hearing that, and we will play it on the air.
Or comment on our show after we play it. That's a bonus. Seriously, just comment on this show, and we'll play it on a future show. Nothing really beats those, because they work really well. Tip.
Thank you to the Elder Podcaster. I want to say thank you to everybody again. I have been Cooper. Thank you, everybody. Say good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
And thank you for swinging by, as always. And we all hit stop. Life on the Swing Set is currently seeking bloggers and article writers. So if you have an idea or thought that we may not have covered, or you have a unique angle that you'd like to cover, please email me at contact@lifeontheswingset with your pitch, your introduction, or anything else that you think I might want to know on why you should be climbing on up and joining us on the swing set. Again, that's contact@lifeontheswingset.com.